can't even wait, dude. I gotta go. It's episode 67 of the Fantasy Football Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Two Drink. Of course, I got my boy Swags here. What's up, Swags?
What is up, my man? We have a very special guest today. We're not even gonna wait to get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
We have.
Tell them who we got.
Well, we have Mr. Matt Harmon, the creator of the Reception Perception. Kind of slipped up on that, but that's what I do. From NFL.com, NFL Live, writer for the Fantasy Footballers, Backyard Banner, Matt.
What do you not?
What
do, Matt?
Don't you do?
I guess have a life, have a social life, maybe. No, I try to get that in every now and again too. But thanks so much for having me on, guys. It's really going to be a fun conversation we're going to have. And yeah, you know, as my career goes on, I need to start hacking away at some of these titles. You know, like let me just get one of these places to offer that big payday. You know what I'm saying?
Clean it up a little bit.
Right.
Now, well,
make these intros a little more smooth.
Yeah, and tell them to add social life to it.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Some time set aside.
I like that. Yeah, that would be nice.
I mean, just fake it.
Fake it till you make it. I feel like he's made it. That's where we're
I don't know. I'm still waiting on that made it feeling, but I'll let you guys know.
But fair enough. We'll be waiting. Man, I'd like to jump just why we got here. Let's jump right into these wide receivers. The latest one, or the one we're still waiting on, is Jordan Matthews right here. And all that talk. I know we were talking a little bit off air here before, but Shane, I'm going to let you kind of run with Jordan Matthews, because I know you got something coming out here before too long.
I have really good feeling about Jordan Matthews. So, Matt, what I've kind of looked at is what Jordan Matthews did compared to some of the rookies that he came out with that year, and what the quarterbacks he changed through in the first couple years. And then I looked at kind of just what the Patriots have done with a slot receiver, and it seems like they usually have one primary slot receiver. For this, I used a lot of Wes Welker and Julian Edelman, and I think he's the next one.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting signing, like you mentioned, because Matthews has primarily been a slot receiver in his career. I mean, I think at this point, like, he's definitely one of those guys that was coming into the league and looked like he measured it out as like a typical number one X receiver, but he never really played that way. He never really profiled as a guy that was going to beat a lot of press man coverage. He was more a guy that could sift through zones in the middle of the field and run underneath routes well, which is why like that fit with Buffalo was just always going to be a disaster. You know, like mm-hmm. that, like nothing about that was going to work out. You know, Tyrod
in general,
yeah, right, for sure. Tyrod, like, it was just so bad. You know, they took all these receivers that were more like vertical threats, like a Marcus Goodwin, Sammy Watkins, even Robert Woods can like get down the field on dig and out routes, and you know they remove all those players and they bring in a bunch of guys who, you know, are more of like, you know, Zay Jones, Jordan Matthews, like more slot receiver types, just not really good fits with what Tyrod Taylor does well as a passer either. So it was just a doomed marriage there. So it's kind of just one of those years you can throw out and forget. And he really is like the perfect Patriots reclamation project, like you mentioned, because, you know, yeah, they definitely have a lot of success with slot receivers. Edelman in his, you know, who's coming off an injury. So that's probably important to note. He's getting up there in age and is coming off a year missed. But, you know, they've had success using in some of these later years, like using Edelman as about a 50% slot and outside player. I mean, back in 2015, he was kind of playing as a flanker and as an interior receiver. And then they also had Danny Amendola as a slot receiver as well. So maybe Jordan Matthews can kind of slide into what Amendola is leaving behind, which isn't, you know, a ton of beefy production or anything. But there's a lot of room right now in the Patriots passing offense with Brandon Cooks being gone, with what, you know, the questions about Edelman. And I think Matthews is going to be a candidate to kind of fill that interior receiver role.
Yeah, I agree.
If he can stay healthy, you know, opposed from Amendola, you know, the 12, 14 games you're getting. If you get 16 out of J-Matt, I think you'd probably be more happy there for sure.
And that's one thing I wonder too, like not only Jordan Matthews' health, but I don't know if he has that Wes Welker or Julian Edelman hunger to like go in there and get a pass when you're about to get plowed by two guys coming at you. That's one thing I think that has let those slot receivers be so successful in New England was just their hunger.
That's kind of across the league is something if you're going to play out of the slot, because I've been talking about this lately where I think that, you know, number one wide receivers, you know, in terms of the your Mike Evans, Julio Jones, those type of guys. Teams should be looking to get those players like 30% of their targets out of the slot, because slot targets are just much more efficient. I tweeted out a graph of like our next gen stats tracking data, and you see press coverage and tight window targets, which just generally create a lot more passing inefficiency. You see those far less often when you throw to slot, like players targeted out of the slot. That might change a little bit with you're targeting these, some of these higher end number one receivers, but at the same time, like, I think you want to hammer that inefficiency while you have it. However, the one question is like, do a lot of these guys want to go over the middle of the field? Like you said, Jordan Matthews at least has had experience doing it. When he was playing with Chip Kelly in the Eagles, that was definitely like his role, you know, a lot of slants, posts over to the middle of the field, which is why he was able to just rack up a lot of production. I mean, you know, when you look at people who do studies with like age adjusted production, he's definitely one of those guys that's really high up there. Injuries were a big reason why he just also didn't create a lot of momentum last year. So that's definitely something to keep in mind too. When you start seeing like multiple parts of the body start to fail him too at one time, that's kind of concerning. So definitely though, it's an interesting signing for sure.
Is there anybody else there in New England you think could maybe break out?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, so, you know, with Brandon Cooks gone, Jordan Matthews isn't like a direct replacement for him. We know the Patriots adjust to whatever the talent on their roster is. But you would think that they're still looking for one more outside receiver to go along with Chris Hogan, Julian Edelman, and whatever they get out of Jordan Matthews. Because as much as we can be excited about Jordan Matthews, we have to acknowledge that he is just a flyer too. You know, I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen.
They didn't give him a lot of money or anything either, right? Like, he could almost
Yeah, and I'm sure they sold him on like, hey, man, like instead of going to Arizona to kick it with Sam Bradford for more money, like why don't you come to New England, rehab your career with Tom Brady, and then go get another payday next year? I'm sure they sold him on that idea as well, too.
Sure.
But still, again, this opens up the question of is there anybody that can play outside? So we saw Malcolm Mitchell miss all of last year, but I think he's somebody to keep an eye on in training camp. You know, I'm not going to hold out hope forever, but at the same time, he's someone that flashed as a rookie. Played really well when called upon, even in the Super Bowl. So I think we should watch offseason reports to see, you know, what goes on with him. And, hey, man, they've got Cordero Patterson. And he went on GMFB the other day and said that Bill Belichick was going to make him the player he always should have been, which was like, all right, man, good luck with that. But
he's a punt returner, right? That's what he'll be saying.
I really kind of hope that they see that, like, he gets some carries though, because I mean he's just great with, you know, with
sweeps and stuff like that. Yeah,
New England Patriots starting running back Cordero Patterson. I mean, I don't know, it's got a nice ring to it.
But he did that's pretty good with some of that in Minnesota for sure.
Oh yeah, I remember the first first game of that 2014 season. He took that and he took like a big run for a touchdown or whatever. And everybody was like, "Yeah, it's gonna happen." And then
there it is.
Nope, that was not gonna happen.
Yeah,
I'm gonna jump around just a little bit out of order. I was thinking here, but I've started to see some mocks where Patriots even take a wide receiver since they have two. You know, maybe replace Cooks with that 23 that they got or the later one. Is there a wide receiver in this class that would fill that void for them if they got there? You know, and you really like.
There's a lot of, if we're still going to talk about slot receivers, this class is really filled with a lot of guys that I think could fill that interior receiver mold. You know, a player like Christian Kirk could be a first-round pick, Calvin Ridley. Those guys I think could play mostly slot but also play a little bit outside, especially Ridley I think would be a nice flanker option. But
yeah,
to me, I think the Patriots kind of askew the pass catcher in round one. You know, the Cooks investment, which was so fascinating about it, was that they don't really invest a ton in that position. You know, it's much like running back. They find skill position. They're really ahead of the curve right now, which is where I think the rest of the league is kind of catching up to this idea that, like, hey, we don't need, you know, this true number one receiver like Julio Jones, the center of the universe passing game guy. What we need is a bunch of players who can execute in specific roles and specific assignments. Kyle Shanahan actually just recently had a quote about this too, where he coached Julio Jones a couple years ago, and he was like, you know, that player is nice to have. If you have it, you keep it. You know, hey, Giants, if you have it, you keep it. and you use it and you maximize that player, but you don't really need it. What you need is a bunch of guys that can fill roles and execute those assignments. And I think New England has always been able to kind of identify those guys, whether it's, you know, someone on another team like a Chris Hogan or, you know, maybe a lesser known free agent. They pluck guys that way as opposed to making big investments in them. So I think with Cooks gone, they probably look to fill other positions, you know, on the offensive line, which is a big need right now in the front seven, and potentially securing that. I would say that they're going to probably use some kind of major draft capital to potentially acquire a quarterback to kind of keep their replacement in-house.
Do another Jimmy G, pull that guy and build him up.
Yeah, make all our lives miserable for a little bit longer. You know, right. I don't know if you guys are Patriots fans or anything, but it's like, no. Oh, my God. How much longer do we have to suffer through this reign of tyranny?
Not to cry on my parade, but I am a Dolphins fan, so no.
Oh, definitely sorry. Not a
and that's usually the response I get when I say that, yeah. So that's all right.
No, it's a testament to your fortitude and commitment.
I'm just going to say thank you, and can we move off the path? How about we go to the Dolphins? This shouldn't take too long, but Dolphins obviously lose Landry and pick up Amendola and Albert Wilson for about the same amount of money as it would have been to pay Landry, so that feels good. But to stay on the slot receiver part, either one of those guys, I mean, obviously Amendola's been doing it, but I feel like Albert Wilson could probably even kind of step in to do that since Stills and Parker on the outside. If anybody there, with that team just being in shambles, like, yeah. That's putting it nicely, like, is there a piece there that will emerge that, you know, you would feel confident about, like, right now?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to rain on the Dolphins situation with
you. Only get a couple minutes. I'm going to crack a beer while you talk about my Dolphins.
So. Yeah, there you go. So I think, like, when I first saw the Albert Wilson signing, knowing that they were going to let Jarvis Landry go, that actually made a lot of sense because it's like, okay, well, I've always liked Albert Wilson as a player. I think he's sneaky good, you know, and just like a real solid slot receiver. Maybe they pay him too much money, whatever, but they get a discounted Jarvis Landry for a discounted price. But then it made no sense to then double down on the slot receiver thing and bring in Danny Amendola. You know, maybe they want him for the room. They talk about changing culture and all that. I don't have any more. I mean, I'm kind of out on hope on Devontae Parker, but I do think Kenny Stills is definitely a player that probably nobody's going to be talking about, but gets a pretty sizable bump out of this. You know, he's still a really young guy. He's been productive there in Miami. Gase has, you know, for all the qualms you can raise about Gase's coaching job, and I think there's plenty to do, he has done a good job of using Stills, deploying him on the inside, you know, running some routes out of the slot, getting him as not just a vertical threat, but as more of a featured piece of the passing game. He's someone that I think could get a pretty sizable bump up that people probably aren't going to be talking about here. But I feel like Miami's offense just – it's kind of like I'm interested in Kenyon Drake because the only competition they brought in was Frank Gore, and it's like they kind of – he was almost like, hey, just pay me a little bit of money and because I would just want to play here.
I want to go home.
But if that's all the competition they bring in, I think Drake is going to be a popular breakout candidate, but I feel like we're still kind of to be determined on what's going to happen with the rest of the offense because, you know, maybe they invest in a quarterback in the draft. I don't know. It feels like we don't really know what they're going to do behind center yet.
I 100% agree, and I am part of hashtag team never Parker. So, yeah, I didn't want no part of Parker there. Yeah. And we call Amendola Ambulance Dola on this podcast from last year because he's never going to stay healthy. So that's a big no. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so I guess the move is don't draft Albert Wilson, but wait till he gets dropped in week two or week three, and then Amendola gets hurt, and then he's the full-time slot receiver, and then you go pick him up. There's the take.
Now I got to come up with a different plan in all these leagues, but I like where your head's at. All right, let's move on over to how about the Bears not matching Cam Meredith. So Meredith is a Saint. Do you like that fit there, and how do you think that affects, you know, Michael Thomas and whatever else is still there in New Orleans?
Yeah, this is a really fascinating move because if you look just on the surface of the Saints pass catcher core before this move, it was really a light group. Especially at tight end. I still think they're a candidate to draft a tight end maybe in the first round. You know, if someone like Mike Gesicki from Penn State, who is really similar to Jimmy Graham, you know, who they obviously had success with, then he could be someone they look at their first round pick. But I think Meredith You know, he's a guy who I really like. His reception perception in 2016, the last time we saw him, was really good. He succeeded on both the outside and the inside. I think that they use him a lot more as an interior receiver, kind of an upgrade on what they had out of Brandon Coleman last year. You know, I was always a big fan of Willie Snead, but, you know, that went wrong for a lot of different reasons last year. You know, he was suspended the first three games, never got in shape afterwards, and he's a guy who may be on the move now, too, in the restricted free agent market as a result from this move. So I think Meredith has a pretty good shot at maybe pushing 100 targets there in that New Orleans offense, or at least, you know, gets to 90. And it's a good, it's a great move for the Saints offense, just because, again, I think they were kind of light on playmakers after Michael Thomas in the pass game. I mean, they obviously have Alvin Kamara, too, but still, at the same time, like, it's a good move for Meredith, I think, for his fantasy value, as long as his knee is right, which is a big, you know, you can't just yada yada over that. As long as his sure. knee's right, I think it's a really good spot for him.
Tried to hold on to him lately in some dynasty leagues or try to acquire him before this even happened, and most of those people were stubborn to hold on, so they're probably happy about that now. Because
I have zero shares, actually. You may have just kind of made me want to go out and get a couple, though. Might be trying that after the show.
Do it before they hear Matt Harmon talk about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I have one dynasty league. I do own him because it was for sure. Like, let's see what happens. And this is definitely an upgrade because it's not. I mean, it would have been fine if he was back on the Bears in an offense that I think is going to be improved with the way they're going to design and scheme under Matt Nagy and everything. But at the same time, like, this is obviously a clear upgrade from being like the Bears number two, number three target to being, you know, the potential number two in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Just the efficiency of what those passes to him should look like too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So one that's, we're going to have to go back just a little bit here, but another, you know, wide receiver on the move. I want to talk about the Jags. I am here in the just south of Jacksonville. So I get to hear a lot of that mouth lately, which is always fun. But so they let A-Rob go, bring in Moncrief, re-sign Lee. Obviously still have Dee Dee and Cole and Mickens there. Is one of those guys really able to step up? And now I keep seeing mock drafts where the Jags taking somebody like DJ Moore at the end of the first or a wide receiver. They really need to address that. They don't have that piece already there on a team that's not going to throw a lot.
Yeah, that's my question, is like, with a team that's going to be based on the run game, do you need to go out and make a first round investment in a wide receiver? I would kind of be surprised because they've already made investments in that position. You know, they invested big money in Marquise Lee, and they got Dante Moncrief on a one-year deal, but it's a lot of money on a one-year deal, which was a little puzzling, to say the least. And I like guys like Keelan Cole and DeeDee Westbrook, so I would think they probably pass on receiver in the first round, but there does seem to be momentum for it.
Sure.
I don't know. I would not, like, if I was hoping – you know, for a lot of progress for a guy like Cortland Sutton or something, or one of these, if you're a big fan of one of these receivers, I probably don't want him to go to Jacksonville at the end of round one. For sure. So yeah, to me, I think I would hope that they go in with the core they have and try to make it work. I don't think that any of these, like, what they would need is a true number one receiver. And maybe Sutton or a guy like Equanimeous St. Brown might be that prototypical guy in a best case scenario, but I just don't think Jacksonville's that best case scenario for it to happen.
And they're still going to run the ball so much, honestly. And with that defense, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they went another guard or tackle at the end of the first there and solidified it that way. And I'm with you. If the Jags draft one of those top five, or really any rookie wide receiver, I'm probably going to have to bring them down a couple pegs. I just don't see it there with that team.
Nah, yeah, I totally agree.
Do that, yeah. All right, this one's maybe a little bit more speculation than it is for real, but I'm just seeing this kind of come through now, is that looks like the Cowboys might release Dez, or it's looking that way. So let's speak to Hearns, since Hearns moved there, moving off of the Jags. Look at that segue. I'm getting good. But it's Hearns, and then you got the two twins in Switzer and Cole Beasley. And I don't want to trust Terrence Williams. Like, they got to bring somebody in, but no Dez, that team's in trouble, or no? You're ready to move on.
I'm okay with them moving on from Dez. He was a nightmare last year, man. I mean, going back, I just recently charted his season for reception perception. I posted the chart on Twitter.
That was gross.
So he scored below the 10th percentile in success rate versus man and press coverage. really the only route that he ran frequently and got good separation on was the deep out route, which is a real low percentage pass, which I think was why – I think this is why they are making this move, is because Dez – you know, for one, Dez is probably not going to take a pay cut because he doesn't want to, which, you know, too bad. But, like, I think at this point he either – I don't think he can succeed as an outside X receiver anymore. He needs to kind of go along the Larry Fitzgerald path, which is hard to do if you don't want to buy into it. I mean, these guys who have done this before, like Larry Fitzgerald, like Reggie Wayne or Hines Ward, some of these guys that have eventually moved into that slot receiver mold – you know, we talked about it earlier. It's a way different assignment in terms of running routes over the middle of the field, taking that punishment and everything. These guys have been hesitant to do it until a coach like Bruce Arians or something convinces them that it's going to extend their career. I think that Dez, if he wanted to do that, would extend his career because, again, he just can't separate on the outside against top corners anymore. That athleticism is gone at this point, and he's never been a great technician. So, to me, I think that we're – I have no idea what happens with Dez now. I struggle to come up. I don't know. Maybe you guys can think of something, but I struggle to think of like a team that would make a lot of sense for him based on what I just said. And for Dallas, I think this move is about creating more layup throws for Dak Prescott, because I'm a fan of Dak Prescott. I think he's a good quarterback, but I think he was really dealt a raw hand last year with guys like Dez. Cole Beasley was bad. Terrence Williams has never been good. There was just a lot of like low percentage passes. They don't incorporate the running back enough in the passing game either. So I would hope that Dallas now probably looks at the 19th overall pick, you know, a player like a DJ Moore or something like that, somebody to create more of those wide open windows. Maybe a guy like a Cortland Sutton who fits that X receiver mold, but at least at the onset of his career could be a guy that you use like a Demaryius Thomas and get him into space. So there's a lot of ways that Dallas could take this. They don't have a good receiver core on paper now without Dez, but I would contend that they really didn't have a good receiver core with the current iteration of Dez Bryant anyways.
That's Dez fair. Doesn't seem too approachable, to say the least.
Well, what did he say? Well, I mean, at the end of the season, they asked him, you know, would you want to take a pay cut? And he was like, no, I don't want it. So that was.
And he kind of said he might play out of the slot a little bit, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't seem like the. I mean, I don't know the guy, so what do I know? But he doesn't seem like the most, like, teach the old dog new tricks type of guy.
No.
To me, I think, like, the strange part about this move with Dallas is just the timing. Like, why did this take so long? You know, why didn't you do this several months ago?
Right.
When you could have potentially competed for an Allen Robinson or a Sammy Watkins.
Definitely.
I don't know. So yeah, it to me, it's just very, very, it's very strange timing, but I don't think I totally get the move.
So
Jerry Jones has a flair for the dramatic on Friday the 13th. That's all I can
maybe think. A little bit. It is Friday the 13th. We forgot about that.
What were you going to say, Swag?
So going off teaching an old dog new tricks, like, how do you feel about somebody like Jordy Nelson going to play for the Raiders?
Well, I think that it's a down – like, Jordy Nelson to Michael Crabtree right now at this point in their prospective careers, I don't think that is an upgrade for the Raiders. In fact, I think it might be a lateral move or even a downward move at this point. I think that Nelson is similar to Dez Bryant, that he started showing signs even his big touchdown season in 2016 that he was slowing down in terms of could he separate on the outside anymore. His reception numbers were really poor early on in the season when he was mostly being used on the outside. But when they started to move him inside at about 30%, like I said earlier, this is a good thing to do with wide receiver ones, moving him into about 30% of his routes from the slot, then you saw him kind of start to produce a little more, start to produce better separation numbers in particular. So that to me is what I think the Raiders need to use him as if they're going to get the best out of him. So I think it's probably a lateral move at best. I'm just really kind of down on the whole Oakland offense right now because, like, who can you lock in right now as a no doubt above average player on that offense? Probably Amari Cooper, but he's coming off a nightmare season no matter what way you slice it. I mean, I think he'll rebound, but I do think it's fair to question, you know, is this guy ever going to be an elite number one wide receiver? We haven't seen it yet. He's straight back. I mean, he's not good at the catch point at this point in his career. Like, We know he drops the ball a ton, but he has also never been above reception perceptions average on contested catch conversion rate going back to his final season at Alabama at any point in his last 3 years. Actually, his contested catch conversion rate from last season is the lowest I've ever charted. So, I mean, it's not a good number. That's not a good skill for him. So I think we got a lot. And Derek Carr's coming off a poor season. Marshawn Lynch, there's plenty of questions about. They have the worst backup running back in the league in Doug Martin.
From starter to worst backup running back in the league.
They've got a lot of work to do on that offense. So I'm just kind of right now considering maybe like Amari Cooper, a guy that I want to target this coming year, depending on where he goes in drafts, if there's any sort of discount. But beyond that, I'm kind of like hands off this whole Oakland situation right now.
Yeah.
I love that take.
I kind of agree, especially with Jordy Nelson. So you're saying to sell Jordy Nelson?
I mean, are people going to buy? Are people excited about this?
That's the answer.
I think so.
I have not got anybody to buy him. I'm holding too many Jordy.
You probably want too much. Yeah. I know you.
Right. That's probably also true. Maybe not now. Maybe I'll have to give him that a little bit.
I don't know. I just, you know, I think there's a chance it could work out just because there's so much volume to be had there. But at the same time, I just, like I said, very, very questionable, this whole thing.
Let's the Bears and A-Rob, obviously big things with A-Rob, but I'm almost more interested in some of those smaller ancillary pieces there they brought in, like Burton and Gabriel. Mm-hmm. Can Gabriel steal enough away, you know, kind of run that slot position like we're saying, or do we see Burton staying on the outside a little bit more and not playing the true tight end position? Because he's not really.
Yeah, no, I think that Burton is going to – I mean, it's nice that – Matt Nagy's actually been transparent about, like, hey, I want to use this guy like I use Travis Kelce, which makes a lot of sense. You know, Kelce is a guy they don't use as a traditional tight end. They move him around. They get him routes out of the slot. He always produces big yards after catch numbers because they get him into space. I love that fit there stylistically. I really love everything the Bears did this offseason. You know, they're a team that wants to be progressive, up-tempo, spread offense. I think that Nagy really understands the way the league is going, having studied under Andy Reid, who you got to give a lot of credit to, where we're constantly ripping these coaches like Jeff Fisher or John Gruden for not adapting to the future. Reid is an old-school coach who, as soon as he got to the Chiefs, was like, okay, I'm going to install a spread offense, you know, which is the way, you know, very, you know, more futuristic at that time. So I like the way that this is setting up for the Bears and for Mitchell Trubisky. I think they're going to create a lot more of these layup throws over the middle of the field. If you look at the Chiefs wide receivers and next gen stats, they averaged more separation than any team in each of the last 2 years. And that definitely, I mean, the inclination is to say, well, they have a fast player like Tyreek Hill. Does that have something to do with it? I think it has much more to do with how they deploy their receivers, where they dole out targets for these receivers. So, I'm really excited about the Bears, but also with Allen Robinson, of course, I think they're going to get him a lot more free releases, a lot more, you know, again, higher percentage targets. But it's going to bleed down to the rest of these weapons, too, like the Burtons and the Taylor Gabriels. And even in the running backs, too. You know, I'm excited to see how they use Tarik Cohen. There's been some trade rumors with Jordan Howard. I doubt he ends up getting traded. But there's a lot of interesting weapons right now on that Bears offense, which is surprising to say after what we saw last year.
And are we still holding out any hope for Kevin White, or has that ship sailed?
I mean, it's the first year he's coming in healthy, I guess. So there's that. I think that anything they get from him is gravy at this point. He is a former top 10 pick. You know, I think he was physically gifted coming out of college. He's rocked up. I mean, I know Rap Sheet tweeted that photo of him, like, cut as hell in like some paradise island. So I guess there's that. Must be nice. Must be a nice life. But I don't know. I think anything we get out of him is gravy. But he's someone that's worth monitoring in training camp and offseason reports and everything.
If I made you pick one for this season between Kevin White or Malcolm Mitchell to score more.
Wow.
That was kind of dirty, but.
Yeah, I'm going to – wow, I really got to think of. I mean, I guess I'm gonna. I'd probably go with Kevin White. No, I'd go. I don't know. That's horrible because it's like you can tell yourself a story with both guys, but you have to tell a story. And right now it looks like I'm going to take the guy at the Patriots offense right now. I'll take Malcolm Mitchell. That's a tough one, though.
I now have to change a two-minute breakdown question for you, but I had to get it in right then. So you're welcome.
All right, there we go.
Just to give you a little teaser there. So talking about Reed, let's jump over to the Chiefs with Sammy Watkins landing there. Still got Tyreek Hill, still Kelsey. Some guy by DeMarcus Robinson on the other side. That's a Gator, so I got to mention it. He doesn't really count, though. But Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill, Kelsey, like, they all going to gel together? Are we going to get the same kind of stuff there?
A lot of mouths to feed. But the Chiefs right now are a very captivating team because they are handing over a contending roster, you know, that was in the playoffs last year to a rookie quarterback with conviction. Like, they're really excited about this move to Patrick Mahomes. The thing for fantasy, though, is I think this could be like a fun real life offense, but a frustrating one for fantasy owners, because I could see, you know, between Hill, Watkins, and Kelsey, I could see one of them leading in yards, one of them leading in catches, and one of them leading in touchdowns, and it could be hell. Any single one of those guys does the thing, you know. It's a frustrating team to pick apart. My inclination is still to value Travis Kelce right about where we probably would. Maybe Watkins and Hill kind of eat into each other, because the big thing about this is I'm excited about Patrick Mahomes. They're obviously excited about Patrick Mahomes, but it's hard to be more efficient and more productive than Alex Smith was last season, you know, from a statistical perspective, with an offense that still has a featured running back there and still wants to run the ball. So These guys are probably going to be overpriced in fantasy, but I think it makes the whole offense more explosive and more scoring chances with this young quarterback behind center.
Does one of those wide receivers sound more appealing or safer to you?
Cheaper draft cost, maybe.
Watkins is a little cheaper, sure. Yeah. But
yeah, neither who's one of them win sounds it for safe, you? But I think I'm going to go with Tyreek Hill on this one.
I think I would, too. And a lot of it for me is just, like, the limited touches. So if he still gets limited touches, I think he should still be able to do some decent work.
Right. He's shown he could be efficient on low volume. And Watkins has at his best, too, for sure, shown he could be efficient on limited touches. But at the same time, like, Tyreek Hill, I think, is the ascending player here. He showed like little glimpses in his rookie season that he could run routes and get open like a traditional number one receiver. Last year, he was great on contested passes. So I definitely think that he's kind of developing into that top level receiver, whereas I think Sammy Watkins has kind of leveled off at this point, despite the fact he looks more like a traditional number one. So I'm going to go with Tyreek Hill on this one, especially like you said, he can still be a game breaker. You know, you can draft around a player like Tyreek Hill, who at his best is going to be a weak winner, and at his worst, you can kind of insulate his floor by drafting some more safer players along with him.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. What about staying with the Chiefs real quick? They've lost a lot of pieces on defense, so I know it feels like it's going to be a headache because you're probably not going to know which pass catcher is going to do it, but anything into, you know, Mahomes having to throw a lot more this year because that defense feels like through free agency is just kind of falling apart. I'm sure they draft somebody, but you're asking a lot out of a couple of rookies that probably come in and start. So maybe Mahomes ends up, you know, throwing more than Alex Smith did last year. Even if he's not as efficient, I think maybe numbers-wise could get close. I know we're asking a lot out of Mahomes there, but just
– No, but it's a good point because this team does look like it's set up to be in a lot of shootouts, you know. With the way that defense – I mean, there was a bad defense last year, and you're right. It looks like it's lost a few pieces. Obviously, Marcus Peters being the headliner. So, yeah, no, this could definitely be a team that is throwing a lot, trying to play catch-up football, which for fantasy, obviously, is always great, especially if they continue to keep Kareem Hunt involved in the pass game. He caught over 50 passes last year. I think it's all looking good for the Chiefs offense. It's just going to be parsing it out projection-wise will be a little bit challenging.
Fair enough. I got one more team kind of scheme I want to get to, and that's the Rams, the all in for right now. Rams bringing Cooks in, but we still got Woods, Cup, and obviously Gurley's getting his touches. Plus, we got Higbee, and maybe Everett will show up. I think we saw the death of Josh Reynolds with Cooks coming in, but is there anybody there that's going to emerge, or is this kind of the same scenario where it's nobody's going to get 100 targets and they're all just going to see who's the most efficient? Do you like one guy more than another there?
I think that you're right on the point that this is going to be an offense where it struggles to see one guy hit 100 targets. I mean, I think Cooks could maybe get there. Woods might get there. You know, any of these guys conceivably could. It depends on, you know, Woods might have hit that last year if he hadn't gotten injured.
Sure.
So at the same time, I think that this is a, you know, this is a group that spreads the ball around. Even in Washington, when McVay was there, they've never been an offense that's funneled targets to one wide receiver. I don't expect that to change right now. They're a team much like we were talking about with the Patriots and the way the league is going. They're a team that has these wide receivers that succeed in specific roles and specific assignments, but don't really have a true number one. You know, they didn't use Sammy Watkins as a true number one receiver last year. Robert Woods is a really good possession receiver who was super efficient last year. You know, they have Kupp in the big slot role, and now Cooks comes in and becomes kind of that what they used Watkins as last year, which was this like a situational vertical threat. Now they can use Cooks, who's even better at that than Sammy Watkins. So I understand what the Rams are doing. I don't think any of these guys are going to be like number one wide receivers or even really high end twos in fantasy on a consistent basis. But it's the perfect way to construct an offense in the NFL today.
Or Madden. That'll be a team everybody's got on.
Oh yeah. Everybody's going to want to be the Rams.
And I'm sure you probably know this more than I do, but it just felt like Goff didn't really want to throw the ball downfield, you know, deep last year. Do you see Brandon Cooks getting more work than Sammy did? Because Sammy ended up with only, what, like 37 receptions? Like, that's a huge downgrade. Like, can we get to 60 receptions with Cooks? Are we going to see that kind of just feed into him?
It's going to be tough, especially with the defense having so many upgrades too. Like, if the Rams are winning games and playing super efficient, like,
see even more Gurley this year than we did last year, maybe.
See more rushing, more situations where they're not throwing the ball a ton. I mean, I can see this being a tough draw for Cooks. I mean, I think it's definitely I don't know how you spin it as an upgrade for his fantasy value at all.
Right.
Probably better that he's going to be there a little bit earlier. I mean, you got to remember, like, Sammy Watkins came there in the middle of August, you know, with, like, little to no preparation time at all. In that Rams offense. And I think that was a big reason why it took them a little while to kind of get going.
Definitely.
Beyond the fact that they want to spread the ball out. So it's good that Cooks is getting there a little earlier, but I don't really see how this is a situation where he's going to produce big fantasy numbers.
Is there any reason to mention Mike Wallace to the Eagles or Troy Smith to the Panthers?
No.
Finally got to Carolina, and it's a no. Got it.
If you have to say, is there any reason? No.
Right. Fair enough. I did say Panthers though, and I don't have this one marked down, but Curtis Samuel, are we going to see anything there?
I think they're hoping that you see something, but at the same time, like, they're a team that is telegraphing that they want to invest in a wide receiver in the draft. They've sent Norv Turner and Lance Taylor to a couple pro days. Norv Turner was out there with a giddy grin on his face running DJ Moore through workouts at the Maryland Pro Day. Yeah. I know Lance Taylor went to the Penn State Pro Day to check out Deshaun Hamilton. They brought in Ridley to the facility. They've brought in several of these guys that I think are these good route runners, you know, separators to create these more layup throws for Cam Newton, who throws deep vertical down the sideline to tightly covered receivers more than anybody in the NFL. So I think that they're definitely looking to change kind of the philosophy there. And that does lead to questions of, okay, what does that mean for Curtis Samuel? But I mean, Curtis Samuel, like, it's hard to count on anything with him because he had what was essentially a lost rookie season. And then the first time we started seeing anything good from him in that Miami game, he got hurt. So
yeah.
I don't think they're like, I think it would be kind of foolish to, like, count on anything from him. Mm-hmm. You can hold out hope, but it's just a little bit like, it's more like – like we said with Kevin White, like, whatever you get is kind of like gravy.
Is there a rookie receiver you would like to see more on Carolina than one of the others? I know you mentioned a couple there, but if you could have your pick, all of them are available when Carolina comes up, who do you want them to take? You're a Panthers fan, is that correct?
Yeah, it's a complicated relationship, but
fair enough.
I think
you pick one for Carolina.
If they're gonna go receiver in round one, I think a player like DJ Moore makes sense because he would help create those open windows in terms of the short to intermediate routes, whereas none of those guys they currently have really are those good separators. But I think what would be really, you know, maybe more beneficial to them is address the interior offensive line, which I think is a potential nightmare position. With Khalil retiring, with Andrew Norwell leaving to the Jaguars, like you could potentially go that direction in round one, and then in round two, round three, maybe then you look at somebody like Anthony Miller or Deshaun Hamilton, guys I like who can do kind of this, because this wide receiver class, I mean, there's just not a lot of difference between your first ranked receiver and your 10th ranked receiver. There's a lot of these guys possess very similar skill sets. So if they go back to round two with a guy like Miller or Hamilton, that would make a lot of sense to me as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, for being such a running back heavy rookie class coming in, or at least, you know, being said top wise, it seems like there's a decent amount of depth wide receiver wise, like you said, where landing spots really going to matter with, you know, and could really shift maybe 10, 12, 15 guys there around in positions, or to me at least.
And no right. Devin Funchess love, Matt?
No, Funchess took a big step last year. For sure. I've never been a Funchess guy.
I liked you, Matt.
but last season, you got to admit, he definitely took a step forward, finally. It took a while. I still don't think he is, you know, I wouldn't lock him in as, like, the future number one wideout in Carolina. The fact that they're showing so much interest in the position kind of speaks to that as well. But he took a big step forward last year. He's definitely someone that wins on contested passes, and he took a big step in that regard. So I'm not like in love with Funchess, but right now he does look like he could inhale a boatload of targets there as the top receiver. But that's going to change a lot if and when they invest at the position in the draft.
You get the answer you wanted, Shane.
somewhere in between you and I, yeah. I guess.
Fair enough. All right, we're this is time is going faster than I wanted to. I'd like to touch a little bit on some rookie wide receivers, but I still want to make sure we got enough time for that 2-minute breakdown, which is never ends up 2 minutes. But just a couple questions, maybe more along the line of just reception perception in general. That's just based on the routes they run. That's not necessarily not a lot of stock goes into like strength of schedule, college conference, you know, quarterback throwing to them. Is that right? Like, it's just purely the route they run against that defense?
Correct. Yeah, it would be pretty tough to adjust for, like, strength of schedule or the cornerbacks that they face without me having to go in and chart every individual cornerback, which I think you can understand why I wouldn't want to do that.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, no, it doesn't account for any of that. But what I think reception perception's designed to do, the longer I've spent, you know, because this is something I started doing back in like the 2014 after that season, or
that's like the third fourth year of you doing it, right?
Yeah, correct. And I think the more you spend with a process like this, the more you start to understand it. And I think what I'm starting to get from it is less you know, I don't think it's as great as like a pass fail, like, oh, this guy sucks and this guy's really good. But what I think it helps do is kind of categorize players and like show, okay, this is what this player does well. This is what archetype he can fit in. Now, how does that fit in well with this current team, especially for college prospects? You know, because maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I would have looked at a player like Christian Kirk and been like, oh, well, he can't separate verse man or press coverage. Like, he sucks. But now, at this point, the longer I've spent with the data, the more you can see, like, okay, here's the success rates. Break them out by each individual route. By like, look at how great he's a kind of average separator against man coverage, but look at how good he is against zone coverage. Okay, good. He's a slot receiver who also wins on contested passes. We fit him in type of like a Randall Cobb type of archetype. So that's what I think the series is kind of developed into, as opposed to like, okay, this is like, well, this guy sucks and this guy's good.
Gotcha. This is maybe a little funky how I ask this, but a guy like Auden Tate and DJ Moore, kind of opposite ends of the spectrum from what we saw from the combine. Mm-hmm. Does combine numbers make you want to go back and look at any of that, or your numbers just are what they are from the routes run? Like, both of those dealt with crazy quarterback issues and obviously excelled or didn't for whatever reason there. But when you see a guy like Auden Tate run, like, not run, walk, or DJ Moore just kill it, you know what I mean? Does that make you like, yeah, this is definitely going to work? Or do you shade more to wanting to go back and look, why didn't he run so fast, even if he did better on certain routes? Or
yeah, no, I think that's a good question. And it, like, DJ Moore is a good one that sometimes there's a combine time or a combine measurement that really fits with what reception perception would show. Even a guy like Courtland Sutton's a good example of, you know, he has like a freaky great three cone time for somebody his size. And I think what his reception perception shows is he's a great player after the catch and can separate on some of those less nuanced routes. But like, he's not a technically precise player, but the routes where he's just asked to, you know, out athlete players, then you really see him score well. So I think that it's definitely something that, you know, I'm absolutely 100% not one of those people that's like, the film is the film, you know, or trust the film. Like, I don't understand how anybody
use it all. Yeah.
And I don't understand how anybody has that sort of confidence in what they see, because we don't approach any other walk of life like that. We don't ever just be like, no, my eyes saw it, like, and that's what it, you know, that's what it is.
Magic is real.
You've never obviously been like lied to by like a significant other or something, or you know, like, that's why we don't just take, you know, eyewitness reports in courts, because our brain isn't great about being able to, like, I see something and now I categorize it and that's objectively what happened. So I don't know why anybody just does that with football. So I 100% want to invite all of these different methods of studying prospects into the equation, whether it's reception perception, which I don't take as like a biblical truth or whatever. Sure. And then other people, what they do with different type of research. And I think that's how you come to kind of the best conclusion on players.
All right, I got one last thing on college guys, and then we'll get to the 2 minute. And I'm going to stay with Auden Tate. I sound like an Auden Tate truther here, and I did have him ranked up fairly, you know, inside the top 10 before the combine. I just feel like his hands are really strong. And then you mentioned Sutton, who is definitely, if not wide receiver one, and like the top three wide receivers for just about anybody sitting around there. And to me, it seems like he wants to body catch or double catch maybe a little bit more too often for my liking. I don't know if that's more quarterback, you know, throws and where it's hitting him, or just he doesn't need to step up to that level of competition. Do you get into anything of you know, that part of it with these college guys where maybe he has the hands but he's just being lazy and letting it come into the chest? Or no, he really doesn't have those, you know, that kind of strong hands to catch it, you know, being contested?
Yeah, I'd struggle to anytime people say like, oh well, this guy, you know, doesn't try, or he's you know, he's not showing a lot of effort. I don't really know. I don't really feel comfortable like saying that, because I think it's kind of just guessing.
Sure.
But so I don't really know about that. But in terms of you know, that I think that just speaks to what you're saying with Sutton, like his developmental curve, which I think is going to be longer. He's a guy that to me is kind of similar to like Demaryius Thomas, who I mentioned earlier, that he might take a little while to get rolling because he's a raw physical player that isn't a great technician at this point. But in the right spot with the right quarterback, like when we saw Peyton Manning come into Denver, that really started to work out, to just have Thomas just do the things you do well, you know, which was run these four routes, do really well on those routes, and get in space and win after the catch. I think that's what Sutton's going to be best used as too, and that's why to me, of all these receivers, he's the one I think might be most landing spot sensitive. You know, if he goes to a place like Jacksonville at the end of the first round, it's like, oh god, like,
gross.
Probably forget about it. But if he goes to like the Packers or something like that, like a team that needs an outside receiver, a big playmaker, then I think you're excited. Dallas is a spot that I would look out for with him, now that they've officially released Dez Bryant since we've started talking. So
there's
a lot of potential with Sutton for sure, but I think with some of the stuff that you're mentioning is just a part of that developmental curve that I think he has.
Awesome. Man, I feel like I could talk about some college guys and even the other ones for days with you, but we are running low, and I definitely want to make sure we have enough time for 2 minute breakdown. Matt, 2 minute breakdown. We're going to ask 12 questions. The timer will start after I finish the first one. You just got a first instinct. Try not to think too much about it. Some might be a little silly.
Let's do it.
We're both dads, so we got some dad jokes in here too. So.
No, that's cool. I need to get better. I'm always told I need to get better about being shorter.
Well, it doesn't usually work, but that's what we try for here on this part. But
hey, we're all trying to get better.
We'll see what you got.
There you go. Swags, you ready?
Yes, sir.
And now, your 2-minute breakdown.
All right, Matt. We are recording this on Friday the 13th. Are there any superstitions, rituals that you have that might be considered off or weird? Swags, timer.
I don't know about off or weird, but I'm like a super big creature of habit. Every morning I gotta have, like, if I walk, because I walk to work, I gotta have like a cold brew every morning. I don't know if that's weird to people, but it's, but it is what it is.
I'll take it. What was the first team to have graphics on their helmet in the NFL?
I have no idea.
Take a guess.
The
Rams. Good job.
Cool.
A dime has a, a dime has 118 grooves along the edge of it. How many does a quarter have?
300.
119. So close.
Wow.
Better beer. Better beer. East Coast or West Coast? Be careful.
Oh, man. East Coast. And I know because Thank I've you. Lived on both.
Thank you. I need one buy low dynasty wide receiver.
Tyler Lockett.
Gross. Music artist you wish you would have gotten to see before they passed away.
Jimi Hendrix.
Like it.
Nice.
Why are snakes measured in inches?
Good. That's a great question. Why is anybody measuring snakes?
Because they got no feet, man. But
Oh, nailed it.
What fantasy word is overused or misused?
Shares.
Shares. Perfect. All 22 street properties in Monopoly are from one U.S. city. Name it.
New York.
Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Oh, really? Why I'm so stupid.
Friday the 13th. horror movie growing up or as an adult that gave you nightmares.
Not really like a big scared person. So, but there was one like, I can't remember what it's called. It was like this tooth fairy, like witch woman thing. I don't remember what it's called, but I'm blown. So this is great audio content right now.
That sounds crazy as shit, by the way. And there's a timer. Shh, don't tell him. Wide receiver you want to sell before the NFL draft.
God, I would have said Dez, but probably nobody's buying. Funchess is a good one.
Okay, we talked about earlier. Like that. They're going to bring one in. Yeah. And no, then last question. One person you were the most nervous to meet in the fantasy industry starting up. Last question.
Oh, man. Most nervous to meet.
Could even be live. Like
the
on
one
the show,
that first time, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Or yeah, that first time you had a big name on with you guys. Is there anybody?
I'm not like a big nerves person, but I think probably
it's all that cold brew. It's got you going.
Yeah, right. I'm all hyped up. Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know if I've like been nervous to meet anybody, but I will say I'll tell like I guess sometimes like I was like I did you know shows with like Maurice Jones-Drew and like at times it would hit me like, holy hell, man! Like I used to like
that's MJD.
I used to play with you on Madden and stuff. Like this is pretty crazy. But it's just one of those things, man. It's like you gotta just get over it, like it, you know, because there's the one thing you can't do, and I'm rambling on now, but like the one thing you like can't do in like my business in big media is be like a fanboy. That's like the easiest way to not get taken seriously, especially sure. Like, when you're doing fantasy stuff, because I think former players and players have an instinct to already be like, all right, like listen, Dorco, what do you know what you're talking about? And like if you come in like
Dorco,
hey man, I drafted you on my fantasy team, like you want to take a pic, you want to take a picture, like that's the easiest way to like not get
that voice is awesome, by the way.
Yeah. Right.
I'm not definitely not impersonating
you, want that on loop.
don't take it that way.
No, that's awesome, dude. All right, Matt, I want to really thank you for coming on. I had a lot of fun. Not that probably our listeners don't know already, but if they want to find you,
where's Dez
going to
land? Real quick, where's Dez going to land? That's
Seahawks. That's where I'm putting it. Watch out.
That's an interesting one. They definitely have, like I said, Tyler Lockett is a buy low because they don't have like anybody else in that receiver core other than Doug Baldwin right now.
But they need a red zone guy. They got rid of Jimmy Graham. Put Dez over there. Just saying.
Yeah,
I don't mind it.
I really struggle with like a fit for him, because I just don't think he's an outside receiver anymore. It's a big projection there in terms of like, can he play on the slot? I really got to think about that one.
He could do a rap and I would song say with that, Cole Beasley, maybe.
Yeah. There's always that. I would say that like whatever team ends up bringing him in is probably going to be doing it off name brand value only, and it's probably not going to work out.
Yeah, sell some jerseys. You should
sell immediately. Sell immediately and die.
Yeah, I don't know, like the Bengals or something stupid like that.
Ugh. That's even worse.
I don't know. I just maybe the Ravens. Maybe the Ravens.
Where wide receivers go to die. Love it.
Yeah, exactly. They can kill the careers of Crabtree, Bryan, and John Brown all in one.
All at the same time. Nice. Oh, man. All right, Matt, where can we find you, buddy? Where can we get into all your info and all this awesome reception perception stuff? How do we get
You can follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB, and you can check out my reception perception articles at receptionperception.com. That'll take you to all the rookie profiles, any link to buy the Fantasy Footballers Ultimate Draft Kit, where you'll get all of the info on the NFL receivers for this upcoming season.
Awesome. Swags, where can we find you?
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Matt. Now you can stop begging.
Thanks for finally returning my call.
You're welcome, buddy. That was awesome. Really appreciate it. Shane's not going to tell us who he is, so nobody cares. At @FF_breakdown. My one last thing is go check out that ultimate draft kit with reception perception, and that's all I'm doing.
Definitely.
Matt, thanks again, buddy. That was awesome.
My pleasure, guys. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I love you. Could barely see what that was going on there. Barely.
It,
but, I'm barely.